Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. I hope you're having an awesome day. We are broadcasting live from our new online studio, and I mean, this is magnificent. What they have done over here at Blog Talk Radio to make it easier for us hosts is wild. Today is an awesome day. Today's Flag Day. I am proud of the United States and the flag and what she stands for. We will be putting up a number of videos over on Facebook and across our profiles today, spreading our magnificent love for this. It's powerful. This is also the day my 28-year-old son, have not seen him since he was about 18 years old. He has now got all of his legal issues behind him. He's done, and he's coming home, and we are going to have an awesome, awesome time. We are in Chapter 13, Time Out, Winning Strategies for a Bigger Game in Life. Take the shot. You know, I look at this, and I truly sometimes just get perplexed, because it's amazing to me how many people will stop in their tracks due to fear. Now, what really blows my mind is not the fact that a life experience has not caused this fear. I fully understand that. But it's the fact that over and over, people finally just become victims. They become so, I think it's a reverse egotisticalness from, you know, pride. Instead of pride of look who I am, it's a pride of oh, poor me. And Tom starts his book out, this chapter out, and I can't even say it, but listen to this. What is fear and how do you define it? Define it. Is fear bad? Is it good? Is fear a thought or is it a feeling? For most people, when one experiences fear, there is a physical sensation associated to it. It may lead to a rapid heart rate, sweaty palms, dry mouth, nervous stomach, anxiety. Now, that's pretty powerful. But now I want to show you something that is very unique. I'm going to change one word in this small paragraph to make this different. Listen, what is love and how do you define it? Is love bad? Is love good? Is love a thought or a feeling? For most people, when one experiences love, there is a physical sensation associated with it. It could lead to a rapid heart rate, sweaty palms, dry mouth, nervous stomach, anxiety. Now, that blew my mind when I first started analyzing this chapter. Fear, love. It's kind of wild, isn't it? See, the physical sensation, the neural releases in the body are truly the same. Science, this isn't just, you know, some redneck from the South saying this. This is science. It's the same exact physical sensation. Tommy goes on and he says, what if I told you that the experience of fear and the experience of excitement were the same? Science has shown whether the experience is fear or excitement, the body has the same physiological response. I'll take this a step further. Science has also proven, and I can back it up if you're of a spiritual nature like I am, I can back this up through biblical principle. But the mind cannot differentiate from fantasy what is reality. See, we feed our mind, and eventually our mind believes what we have told it, what we have programmed it to believe. This is why it's so important that you don't just rely on the knowledge in your mind, but that you also rely on the wisdom that comes from your heart. See, in this chapter, we're looking at fear and how fear, in most cases, will just stop a person cold in their tracks. How based on what their mind is telling them, they just stop. So if your strongest emotional neurological connection is fear, you won't move forward. However, before I move further in this chapter, I want to use a scenario with you. I believe that excitement can override fear in just about every case if we'll let ourselves go. And here's where I'm going to base this small opinion that I have. I've watched the birth rate of unwed mothers shoot through the roof in the last 20 years. There's more teen pregnancies now than we've seen in quite a long time, if ever. So I would say that there comes a time in the neurological system of the brain when common sense and fear are replaced with the euphoria of excitement and the fantasy of what could be. And if it can happen during a physical event that leads, I mean, and I'm going to get raw for a minute. You've got the foreplay, you've got the event, you've got all that. If you can drive that brain, those emotions, those neurons to such a height during that period of your life, if you can get control of your fear in a normal everyday situation, think of where your life can go. It can explode in a way that you've never, ever seen. But getting back to Tom's chapter for a second, how many experiences do we have in our life where we automatically, it's already in our brain that, oh my gosh, I can't do this or I can't do that. Oh my gosh, look what would happen. Oh, I refer back, and I'll use an example real quick. Mexico. I've got a cousin of mine that now lives in Miami, but she grew up in Mexico. And she used to get fearful because all their TV shows were all about Miami Vice and all about the cops in L.A. and even Dukes of Hazzard, for that matter. And she just assumed, based on the TV shows from America, that we were the wild, wild west, that we were the worst country to come to, that people just got shot and killed all the time. It took a long time for her to realize that that wasn't true. Eventually, she went to New York and lived as a single woman. Now she lives in Miami. But all that fear that was in her mind, we see it today. If you watch the newscast, and I mean, honestly, there's 35,000 people that have been killed in the last decade due to drugs, but that's not all of Mexico. I'll use another scenario that Tom uses because this one's close to my heart, and that's the wild and craziness of the inner city. If you have not grown up in the inner city, then going into it, you get freaked out. I've had privileges in my life to live in just about every type of scenario you can think of. From an upper middle class family that ran around with rich folks, to the same family who grew up with so many of our relatives in the ghetto areas, in the inner city. To where by the time I became an adult, God's blessed me. I can hang out with just about anybody and it doesn't bother me. But I remember one day, I had Paige and the kids in the car, and I said, hey, I want to take you to some places that I grew up at, places I hung out at when I was growing up. And we started into an area that was known in Kansas City as Northeast. It's known as Little Italy. It runs right into the River Key area, and if you study organized crime at all, you'll find that at one time this was the worst place to be in the city. And you could see Paige getting anxious. Honey, is it safe for us to be here? I mean, look at those groups of people. Look at that. Is this a dead end? Are we going to be okay? Because that wasn't something she'd experienced. A little bit of anxiety, a little bit of fear. How many times in your life, due to where you're at today, has fear stopped you? You know the reality, you know the truth, you know if you just go, you're going to win. But yet fear grips you so bad, you just stop. A couple weeks ago when I went to Miami. No, I got to say this, and then you can talk. Hang on. A couple weeks ago when I went to Miami, we had a thunderstorm hit our house. And my favorite dog in the whole world that I've had for the last 5 or 6 years is afraid of storms because she was shot with a bottle rocket a couple years ago. She jumps our fence. And we have not seen her since. Even though common sense, because she comes and she does the same routine all the time, She knows that if she wants inside, all she has to do is knock on the door. But instead, she ran. Because of that fear that gripped her as a dog, think of what it does to you as an adult. Jimmy, I just had to get that out before I lost my track. Go ahead, bud.
No, man, you're absolutely right. You mentioned something about the idea of excitement and thrill overpowering the fear. And it's funny that you say that, because last night my oldest daughter, we're sitting here on the couch having a conversation, and she's telling me, Dad, I want to go skydiving. You know, she's so excited about the idea, the rush, the thrill, the excitement associated with it. She has no concept of the fear that's involved with it. And I think, yeah, that's, you know, heights and the idea of falling is one of the greatest fears known to man. And I thought that it was just so apropos that you were mentioning the two as it related, and I wanted to share that with you because I thought, you know, here's something that most people the world over are deathly afraid of, heights and a fear of falling. And yet, you know, the excitement of doing it is more intense than the fear.
You know, that I love that you brought that up, because let's look at this for a second, folks. Now, this is we're gonna rabbit trail for a second out of Tommy's book, but here's Jim's daughter making a choice and saying, "I'm gonna overcome my fear, and I'm gonna have Dad take me skydiving." And yet, here's my dog, who doesn't have any common sense, doesn't have a choice. In her mind, all she knows is this noise means pain, and I'm getting the hell out of here, and runs. Now, Jim's daughter will get into that plane. They will slide open the door. Common sense is going to say, I'm not supposed to do this. I learned about gravity, and when you jump out of airplanes, if you don't have wings like an angel, you fall. But yet, when she breaks the barrier, of course, I know her mom, and her mom is about as tough as Jim is. So what this little girl's going to have inside of her is going to come out in a rush. And she's going to make a conscious choice to jump out of that plane. Now, think about this, Jim. Once she's broken that barrier of fear, you know your daughter better than anybody. How is that going to affect her life in some other situations that she might be going through at the time?
Well, I'm strongly supporting it, quite honestly. Annette thinks we're crazy. But the idea of jumping out on anything, whether it's, you know, jumping out of a relationship, jumping into a new business, jumping into anything. And I do mean anything. If you can muster up the intestinal fortitude to jump out of a plane, and you overcome that fear with the excitement, the thrill, the energy, the rush, then you can transform your fear from literally anything you do into a positive. And I think, you know, I'm hugely in favor of it, because it's a gateway to a word that you've been talking about ever since you started this new series, and I believe Tom's going to transform the word change in the rewrite of the book, because transformation is an eye-opening experience, nothing less.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's and that's it. And folks, when you decide to transform your life, when you say, I'm going to take the shot, there's some risk involved. It is not easy. But I honestly believe that if you take your life, now this only works for married folks, well, and some that have been divorced. But if you take your life all the way back to the beginning of your marriage, where you were standing in front of a preacher and you looked at your spouse and you said, for better or for worse, for richer or poorer, till death do us part. If you realized at that moment that that was a transformational time in your life, it was scary, it was risky, it was becoming, say, two people getting under one roof and having a lot of struggles and stuff. But when you look at this type of thing, you realize those were some of the first days. You were young in most cases, and that was the first time you were willing to take that big risk. You're willing to transform your life from maybe a single woman or a single bachelor into a married couple. Doesn't matter if the marriage lasted or not. That was the very first one, or one of the first. For Jim and I, one of our first transformational moments were saying, was raising our right hand and taking a pledge of allegiance to the United States and making a lifelong commitment to protect the Constitution of America from foes inside and out. See, every one of us have gone through a time where we probably did not realize how transformational it was. Because in most cases, as Tom's written in this book, we're not present. We're running on autopilot. It's easy to do the little risks. It's hard to take the big risks. Last month, I could have stayed at Ignite 360 making 40% of the money I'd made the month before, which was still, in most people's minds, phenomenal money when you add in the benefits and all that good stuff. But I knew it wasn't where I was supposed to be. And I took a risk that transformed my life in a two-week period for the better. But it was risky. In 2 weeks, because I was willing to take a risk, my life has changed. It reminds me of a story that Tom uses every time. Well, probably not every time, but I tell you what, sometimes he's like your mom and dad. He just tells the same story over and over, trying to drive it into your brain. And I've gotten it, because he tells about the caterpillar and the butterfly. And it's not that I didn't know the stupid story. It's just all of a sudden he brought it alive to me. See, that caterpillar goes into that cocoon. And it takes a risk. Here's the part I'm ad-libbing, because Tom's never brought this up, but that caterpillar doesn't have freedom of choice, but it goes into that cocoon. First of all, it's lived. The birds haven't gotten it. It's gotten squished. Some little kid's not grabbed it. It's in the cocoon. It's wrapped itself up. It can't see a doggone thing. It's got all those freaky little legs. It's hairy. If you mess with it too much, it craps in your hand. And somewhere along the process, it's transformed into a butterfly. Now, most of the time, the story stops right there. Oh, look, you could go from being a caterpillar to this beautiful butterfly. You fly off and, you know, Peter Pan land and all that crap. But here's the truth. Do you realize the caterpillar can blend into its surroundings? It can stay close to the ground. It can stay close to the tree. There's dangers, but not near as many dangers as transforming into that butterfly. See, once you've taken the risk and you transform into this new person, there's going to be new dangers that you face. Butterflies are beautiful. Do you know how many people want to kill a butterfly, stick a pin through its heart, put it in some book so people can say, oh, that's a beautiful butterfly? How many kids, in thinking they're doing something right, collect the butterfly, put it in the jar, they go to show mom, but they forgot to pop the hole in it, so it dies? This is risk. Butterflies don't know it's taking risk, but I can use this story as an analogy because Tom has finally drilled it into my mind. It doesn't matter if you stay where you're at today or you're willing to transform. You're going to have dangers, and the risks are still going to be there. So why would you stay where you're at when you have that opportunity to transform into something better? I'm going to, since Jimmy's on the phone, I'm going to use him as an example. What,
Troy? Let me interject something real quick before you do that.
You just don't. And want
this goes. No, you can use me as an example, you know, in any way you want to, but I wanna add a caveat to a story that I heard told long ago, and the first time I ever heard the expression, I heard it from my father. My father's been sober now for, you know, over 20 years. He's a recovering alcoholic, and he's playing a huge role in AA with other members, you know, other people who are trying to recover and everything. And one of the things that he told me, the story that came out of that program, is the concept that no one will ever transform. He originally said change, but I'm going to use the word transform.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one will ever transform until the pain of where they are today becomes greater than the fear of the unknown. And a classic example of that is a parable from a story of two old farmers sitting on the porch, and there's an old hunting dog sitting over on the steps. You know, the farmers are talking to each other, and old Blue's laying there on the steps, and he just keeps howling. And one farmer turns to the other one and says, "How come old Blue's howling?" He said, "He's laying on a nail." He says, "Well, why don't he move?" He said, "It don't hurt bad enough yet." And that little parable right there is the summation of people will not transform out of their comfort zone until the pain of where they are today becomes greater than the fear of the unknown.
That's true.
Sorry.
You know, that's true. And I was going to use you an example, but I'm going to do better than that. I can't go into all the details. First of all, it's nobody's business. But I'm going to use an example of a young lady that's on the radio show today listening. And when I first met this lady, I was probably, that I remember, I mean, I met her, I was really, really, really young in life, but my earliest memories of this woman, I was only about 4 years old, and it's my mom. And I know my mom's background, most of it. I know what she went through as a child. I knew what she went through as a teenager. I sure the hell know what she went through as a young adult raising as a single mom in the 60s raising me. And there was a lot of mistrust. There was a lot of baggage. There was a lot of background because she grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. But yet somewhere in the middle of 1966, actually it was early spring, a pretty tough guy grabbed her attention. And now she didn't trust men as it was. She didn't trust much of anything. But this one was different. This one showed her something that she probably at the time couldn't even put into words, may not be able to today, but it's been 40 some odd years later. But as I've gone back in my mind, Jim, to look at my parents, you got to understand, they knew each other 2 weeks and got married. And they have been married over 40 years. I am 47 years old. They've been married 45 years in a world where if you can last 10 years, people want to celebrate it. That trust, that transformation, that risk that you take to say, okay, I'm going to lay my soul out there for somebody to stomp on, for somebody to trash. And every now and then, folks, when you're willing to take the risk, your life can be so transformed. Now, here's the funny part about this. Of all of her siblings, none of them truly rose to the level of personal, spiritual, or financial success that my mom did. Because my mom said, "I've had enough. I don't have to play the victim card anymore. I don't have to listen to what other people tell me. I don't have to sit here and say, oh, poor me." And she raised two young men and a boatload of grandkids to feel the same way. Now, Jimmy, when I look at this, we didn't have personal development and crap like that in the 60s and the 70s. You know, towards the end of the 70s is when some of our heroes started to come onto the scene. So back then, my mom and your mom, Jim, your dad, our parents had it a whole heck of a lot tougher than we do today. And when I think about this, it's easier for our children, if they want to transform and take the shot than maybe necessarily it was for us. And you live this on a daily basis. You are training these young pilots that are going to go into combat situations. And you have the privilege to see transformation on almost a daily basis. What is it that gets a snot-nosed kid that's going into the military, he's finally made it through his boot camp, now he's getting ready to learn how to fly a chopper, what is it that causes them to make it through that training and not give up compared to folks that say, I don't even want to be in the military?
One word. Well, no, I'm going to say two words. First off is desire, and second off is commitment. Because we have to remember what the real definition of commitment is. Commitment is doing the thing you said you were going to do long after the mood you set it in has passed. And I believe that the excitement of, you know, the apprehension, if you will, of the feelings, the rush associated with doing what we do. I mean, to this day, I still don't believe that, you know, anybody pays me to go out and fly a helicopter around, buzzing around treetop level and lower sometimes, and doing all of the crazy and fun things that we get to do. There are other people who would be terrified to do what we do. But at the same time, it never fails to be a rush. And what these kids are doing is they have a burning desire deep down inside of them, I don't care what their gender is, to become an aviator. And secondly, they're doing whatever they need to do on the work side from a commitment level to fulfill their goal.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because I'm going to use a very controversial subject since you brought up commitment. You know, throughout history, the name Jesus Christ does really weird things for people. And without debating
Amen.
The issue, did he raise from the dead or not, nobody ever debates the fact that he died on a cross. And do you realize the commitment that has to make? Because right before the Roman soldiers come up, it says that he's in the garden and he's praying. And, you know, I got to think about this, Jim, because if we just had half of the commitment that Jesus Christ had just to die on a cross. And truly, folks, I'm not going to get into the spiritual side. I just want to do the story part right now. That kind of commitment. Now, remember, this is Flag Day, so I'm going to segue this into patriotism. This is the commitment that Jim's talking about with those fine soldiers. This is the commitment that our troops on the front line have right now. It's not about going out there and being warmongers. It's about a commitment to say, I have taken a pledge to protect the Constitution of the United States and the people of America. And by golly, Jim, when you brought up commitment, those are two things that I thought commitment, Jesus Christ and our troops, and I believe I can say those two in the same sentence and do it with pride.
You got my back, brother.
You know, folks, you've got to take the shot. You cannot set back and be a victim, worry about what people are going to say. You've got to take the time today to
Hold
say,
on,
I'm
Troy.
Not
let
going
me,
to
let
fear.
Let me
Go
interject
ahead.
One thing. You just brought up a word that I want to leave a parting thought with people today. No one, and I do mean no one, can become a victim in this life without giving their own consent to it in some degree or another.
Ooh, amen.
Based on the choices that they make, leading up to the circumstances from which they want to cry victim. You cannot
100%.
Be a victim without resigning yourself to that mentality. Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
Nope, that's good. And folks, if you're listening to this right now and you're somebody that says, oh, you don't understand, I'm going to tell you something right now. Jim and I understand circumstances that can rip your guts out. But you make the decision whether or not you want that circumstance to dictate your life or whether you're going to transform above and beyond it. So hang out with us tomorrow. We will be back here We're going to be in Chapter 14, The Pivot and the Drive to the Basket. You do not want to miss this. Live life like it's an epic adventure, and we will see you at the top. Bye now.
God bless everybody.